Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
G20 says no to more money for Europe. Big week of economics coming up. China billionaires are booming. And our guest today, Frank Curzio. We're going to be talking about natural gas to cap off the week of comments and discussion we've had on a variety of the companies within the sector that are dealing with natural gas. And we have lots more coming up on episode number 252 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, how are you? This is Andrew Horowitz, and it's another week. It's the end of February, beginning of March, moving right along, and it is a great time to be invested on the long side. And there's some short opportunities there as well to be seen and to be profited on, but they're lasting a very short time. Have you noticed that even with bad news right now, we're seeing this incredible movement to buy stocks? And we're going to talk about one particular stock that happened to last week as well. And I think it really provides a really good lesson for all of us into what to be looking for when markets are in a buying mode, a frenzy, an uptrend, a bull market condition. Whether we want to believe it or not because of this or that, or whether you're saying, hey, you know what, but look over there, it doesn't matter. The direction of the markets right now are up, right now. That could change or it can continue. It could flatten out and stall. The fact is that you have to watch the various signals and take a little bit of clues from what you see in some of the stranger incidences. Like, for example, we'll talk about Mercado Libre today in a moment, and we'll discuss what happened with their earnings, and it was pretty interesting. But I want to talk to you about a few things first, and then we'll get to our guest, Frank Curzio, who I had this great discussion with last week, and we spent, I don't even know how long we spent on the phone a few times, talking about all the different natural gas plays, all the different companies that are out there that are involved one way or another, not only in the, we'll call it exploration, drilling, production, and transportation of natural gas, but also the discussion about what companies are on the peripherals. For example, who are the companies that could benefit from a conversion from ordinary diesel or gas to natural gas trucks? What about companies that are shipping LNG to places like Japan? We had all this discussion. I said, you know what? We got to talk about this on the show. So I'm going to ask them a lot of the questions that we talked about and kind of get some clarity and hopefully some ideas on how to profit in this area as well. But let's start out with some of the topics that I thought were really interesting. The G20 said, you know what, we're not going to give any more money right now and fund any further monies through the IMF to bail out Europe until Europe gets a better handle on their situation. So it seems that Germany has turned around a little bit and they're looking for outside monies to come in to help out. And why not? I mean, Germany's pretty much been left holding the bag to provide incredible amounts of funding for the various peripherals in their attempt to rescue the euro. And we did see the euro drive up pretty nicely last week. I think it closed in at 134, which is really interesting in all because you saw that Germany's GDP actually moved lower. And there's a clear weakening by every indication of the region, but yet their currency still continues to move down. And there's a lot of things happening with the currency markets right now. There's the whole area of Japan, you know, finally cracking the $80 number. So their yen is weakening. And that's been for the first time in several months. And that's good. They should also be weaker because their GDP has been slipping and they seem to be having to provide additional monetary and fiscal, but monetary stimulus to their system. And that does weaken a currency. Just think about what goes on here. United States, what goes on in the UK. The UK is on, going for their fourth round of quantitative easing. So when you see that there is this quantitative easing, this money printing, this devaluation, debasement of a currency, You'll see that, of course, naturally what happens is that this is going to be effective on the long-term effects of other players and places, like oil prices hitting 110 for WTI, 124, I think it is, for Brent. We saw that gold is climbing, silver is climbing, food prices are climbing again, and we are back not only in a geopolitical problem when it comes to Iran, but there is speculation due to the fact that there's continuation of monetary easing through all sorts of forms around the world. Anyway, so the IMF, there was this concept that, oh, we're going to bump the ESFF up to you know, the EFSF, the Emergency Financial Stimulus Fund to Europe, to bump it up to $2 trillion. And there was this idea that, well, Germany couldn't do it alone, nor could Spain and, you know, whether it was Italy and France. You know, the countries there that were supposed to participate in it really couldn't do it on their own. So the IMF would come in and get the help of the G20. But the G20 met in Mexico and said, you know, we just can't do it right now. We see that your economies are deteriorating, and we see that overall there really is a good effort being given. But at the same time, it's an effort. We don't see any substance right now. So right now, the U.S. is refusing to join the effort. Japan and the BRICS group, Russia, India, China, South Africa are looking for Europe to act first. And they said that the deal of IMF lending resources is unlikely before the fund's spring meeting in Washington in April. So I think there was a lot of hope over the last few days, and that's why the euro really started popping higher, that over the weekend we were going to see some kind of amazing gift through the G20 that would help out. But unfortunately, there's a lot of other places that need money, and you know, there's just so much that all these countries want to give. So, this is probably one of the reasons why, we saw that the European region actually slipped backwards a little bit last week, and there wasn't a real great movement of the markets here. There was a kind of a stop and start, and even though we had better economic news, generally speaking, in the U.S., there was a lot worse in the areas of Europe, and in Asia there was some negative numbers as well. Now, the other thing I thought was really interesting that I kind of had to read it twice. It was one of those, wow, I can't believe that's really happening. And I'm going to take this from a Bloomberg discussion, and I think you'll find this really amazing. So it says the richest 70 members of China's legislature added more to their wealth last year than the combined net worth of all 535 members of the U.S. Congress, the president and his cabinet, and the 9 Supreme Court justices. The net worth of the 70 richest delegates in China's National People's Congress, which opens its annual session in March, rose 565 billion yuan, which is about $89 billion in 2011, a gain of 11 billion from 2010. That compares to 7.5 billion net worth of all the 660 top officials in the 3 branches of the U.S. government. Now, the commentary that came from this and the quotes that came from this when they were looking for it, it says, this is by Ken Lieberthal from the John L. Thornton China Center at Washington Brookings Institute. He says, it is extraordinary to see this degree of marriage of wealth and politics. It certainly lends vivid texture to the widespread complaints in China about an extreme inequity of wealth in the country now. And there's some further discussion that the income of the members reflects the imbalances in economic growth, where per capita income, listen to this, per capita income in 2010 was $2,400, less than in Belarus, and a fraction of the $37,000 in the U.S. Now, this disparity points to the challenges that China has with their new generation of leaders, which are going to be named this year, because they're facing a countering in a rise in the social unrest, which is fueled by illegal land grabs and corruption. Now, what does that say? That says that it is what is happening there is there's an incredible amount of communism / socialism, but capitalism done in a way that it's only good for the government and governmental participants. When you see that kind of money being grown and the disparity, you want to talk about income inequity? You want to talk about a movement that should be going on over there, just like we had here, right? I mean, Occupy Wall Street. We need to, you know, occupy Beijing or occupy Tiananmen Square again. But you know what happens when that happens? No, the folks over here just got kicked out of a park. Over there, they get shot. They get run over by tanks. Now, that hasn't happened lately, but you know what? There were some uprisings lately when the Arab Spring had ignited and it spread all around the world, and China started having some movements and some gatherings and some protests, and boy, those were quickly shut down with significant force. So when we look at China, I find it really fascinating that you have this amount of people there that is incredible, the largest country in population, right? 1.3 billion. And at the same time, you see this incredible wealth and all this money going over there, but it's only staying at the top. And it's staying only in the government. So I think that really sheds some light on that. And that was a great piece. So you could just look that up. It's over at Bloomberg. I think it's entitled, let's see, China's billionaire lawmakers make U.S. peers look like paupers. That was on over the weekend that I saw that. All right. And also want to mention to you that we have a big week of economics coming up. And when it comes to the economics, this is the last week of February. The first week of March is coming up. We're not going to see the official employment numbers this week. That will be next week, the unemployment rate and the non-farm payrolls. But we will see a lot of things this week. We're going to see personal consumption. We're going to see the Case-Shiller Housing Index. That's important on Tuesday. The Confidence Index, that's important to look at as well on Tuesday. And we're going to see probably one of the bigger reporting weeks than we've seen in the last two or three weeks. So we're going to keep an eye on that and watch for any kind of continuation in the trend of better-than-expected reports that come out for earnings. We see a lot of stocks coming out as well. It's kind of coming towards the end of earnings season, the last quarter, we'll call it, of earnings season. Priceline will be coming out. That stock has just been on fire. If you haven't taken a look at the chart on Priceline lately, it came down, and then went vertical. So we're seeing that a lot. There's a lot of stocks that have been coming in and then all of a sudden spiking, and whether it was due to commentary by the company and saying things are better, the global environment getting better here, at least in the U.S. And we're seeing that there's a lot of movement towards investing in the, as people say, the safest place to be right now, and that's in the U.S. equities and bonds. So, you know, I think that's important. And when you look at that, we're seeing just incredible amounts of movement and base breaking out to the upside. And that is working really well for our new product we talked about, which is called Trigger Points, Trigger Point Research. And if you haven't been following us, we have a light sort of feed. We'll call it the Trigger Point Alerts Light, which is what we put on over at Twitter, at Trigger Trading. And we've been talking about, we must have talked about seven or eight times over the last 2 weeks, Questcor. This is a pharmaceutical firm, and they have, as I mentioned, I think last week, they have a, and I definitely mentioned this on the DH Unplugged show, by the way, but they have a drug for multiple sclerosis. There's a few others, but that's the one that they're really making their money on. And there was some announcement a few months back that really dropped the stock dramatically. It was by one of those bloggers that is the short-sighted blogger, where they look at, you know, inequity in maybe a balance sheet or some other problem. And they talked about some marketing thing that was really lacked any kind of credence, in my opinion. Not because I liked the stock or not. It's just I didn't find anything that was substantial in what they were saying. And at the same time, stock must have dropped about 20%. Well, the stock kind of based out a little bit. We've been talking about this. And if they come in with an earnings number that was at least on expectation or a little bit better, the stock is just going to fly. It was set up perfectly. Short sellers were all over it, and there was a potential squeeze going to happen. We commented about this, and we tweeted this out a lot, and we put it on the site and on DH Unplugged, and lo and behold, they did come out with good earnings and popped the stock about 16% last week, which was very nice. We have a nice profit on that, and if you got in anywhere along the way that we talked about, you would be making some good money too. We kept on hammering the point that would be support here and this algorithm that we developed with Task Professional to come up with where the masses are buying and selling, not just from a price standpoint, but a whole gamut of when it is a time and volume and the players that are in there, the stopping points, and all that go into it. We also talked about Dell, shorting Dell under right where it is right now, that this is a point where if it does start backtracking a little bit from its move up, it's going to really start to cave in. Talked about clean energy, Westport Innovations. We talked about Mercado Libre a few times, and I'll talk to you about what happened there. That's the one I wanted to mention. Meli came out, we'll call it Meli, M-E-L-I is the symbol. Meli came out with earnings. Now, one of the things that was happening with Meli is that every time it got above $100, it would get kind of like pushed back down. Went up to 100 last week or so, got pushed back down. And what happened there was that you saw this kind of obviously a seller above the $100 range. And when earnings came out, they missed by 2 cents and they had an okay revenue number and their outlook was okay. But what happened was that the stock dropped in the overnight session about 8 or 9%. Now, on our trigger point research reports that we put out, these are earnings-based reports, pre-earnings, and it talks about the pre- and post-market of what's going to happen potentially for a stock when their earnings come out, a historical look at their earnings. And all this is going to be, you'll find out more about this shortly. If you want to find out more, just go to triggerpointresearch.com, and you can sign up for the mailing list there, and that will give you access to all the things that are going to be coming out in about a week to 2 weeks max. We're going to launch this whole thing. And you can actually, there's going to be a 2-week free trial for some of this, so you might as well get on board right now to find out when this happens. We'll go over to triggerpointresearch.com. So what happened was it did drop about right down to our level, about $89 we talked about would be a point that if it did disappoint would be a kind of a first line support zone. Well, it dropped and dropped and it held at 88, 89 level. And then miraculously the next day it comes, the market's open. And it's up 5%, hit, I think, about 101 or so. Now, it did get knocked down from that 100 level again to about 90, I think 98 and change, but it was still up 2.5%, 3% for the day, which is an amazing turnaround if you were able to get in on that support level. About a 12% move up from that support level. So these are the kind of things that are happening right now in the markets, that there is a buying frenzy going on. And if you can find those points of bouncing, resistance, support, and we have these breakouts, breaking out and breaking down, bounce points, setups, all these things that we have, these different kind of models that we have and different subscriptions that you can have if you want to look at something. Hey, I only want to see stocks that are breaking down, and we're going to have those that are sent out to you through either email or text messaging, and it's going to be directly to you immediately. Some of them we'll have every once in a while, we'll have on Trigger Trading at the Twitter site. But basically, that's going to be just some things here and there that we're going to put up that you may find of interest. But we will have this available next week or so on a subscription basis, and you'll get that 2-week free trial. So do yourself a favor and head over there. Let's see. One other thing I wanted to mention. There was one other thing. Economics, I got that. Okay, this. This is good. Well, maybe there's not a thing I was going to mention. I know I was going to mention. I have to do this. That's right. We're sponsored by GoToMeeting. I almost forgot. Can't forget about GoToMeeting because they have some great stuff. You know, a lot of times when you're dealing with a person and you're in a meeting, you know, one-on-one, and you're trying to understand what they're thinking and their body language. But a lot of times in the past, you hadn't had this opportunity to do so when you're in a virtual meeting. Well, now GoToMeeting has this great service. It's called HD Faces. And with GoToMeeting by Citrix, you could just simply log on to the GoToMeeting site and get this whole meeting going and take a webcam and instantly collaborate with your team or clients or kids or people or friends, family, anywhere in the world. And I think that what is really cool about it is you get to really get a flavor for what the other person's thinking through their body language and their facial expression, et cetera. So you can start hosting your own face-to-face online meeting today at GoToMeeting, and my listeners get 30 days free. Don't wait for the special offer to expire because, you know what, you should do it today. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click on the try it free button right there. It says try it free and use the promo code podcast. And be sure to use the promo code podcast to get your free 30 days. That's GoToMeeting.com. And back by popular demand, who else? Frank Curzio. We're going to talk about natural gas because it's kind of like that topic that everybody kind of like wants to know more about but is so hesitant about because we see what's happening with the price of natural gas, which is pathetic. Frankie!
How's it going
out there? Listen, Frank, I want to talk to you about natural gas. You and I had a great conversation last week. We talked about the whole discussion of, okay, what's going on with natural gas, but more importantly, some of the companies involved. And I've gotten a lot of questions in the past from listeners about, all right, what do I do about this? Should I stay in this natural gas thing? Very volatile. What do I do? So, kind of give me a little bit of backdrop of some of the things that you've been doing, the conferences you've been going to, and what your thoughts are.
I've been spending a lot of time on this, and I have to tell you, I think natural gas as a transportation fuel is the next mega trend in energy. Maybe the biggest trend you'll see over the past 10, 20 years, and it's going to develop significantly over the next 5 to 10 years. I've been doing a lot of research on this for the last 8 months, attending conferences, talking to industry professionals, and trying to get as many facts as I can. And I'm sure a lot of subscribers may be familiar with some of the companies making major moves right now, like Westport Innovations is up 200% in a year. They make the natural gas engines. They have partnerships with almost every major engine manufacturer. They basically have a monopoly on the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Chinere Energy, LNG, has been going higher. We have so much supply of natural gas. Eventually, we're going to export it. And they're signing contracts out. And this is a company that's not expected to make money, I think, for another 5 years. They say 5 years, which probably means 7 years. And they have all international companies are signing agreements with LNG. This way, they'll be able to get this stuff and sell it for a much higher price.
All right, I got to put a hold to this for a second because I want everybody to understand what is the whole idea of LNG versus natural gas. I think people get a little confused. So this natural gas, which is obviously the substance that is, you know, dug up, fracking, or, you know, part of the oil exploration and natural gas exploration process. And then you have this whole idea of LNG, which stands for liquid natural gas. Explain the difference.
Well, liquefied natural gas is just a way when you freeze a natural gas, this way you could transport it. Because you can't transport natural gas from one place to another without freezing it, especially to another country. So there's certain tankers that do this. Companies like TK Energy, Golar LNG, they export LNG every place. Well, right now we have the cheapest natural gas in the world at $2 and change, $2.75.
It's ridiculous. It's unbelievable because – you know, I don't think people know this. I think they think of natural gas like natural gas around the world is the same price everywhere. But in fact, here it's two and change. It's like $15 over in the Asia region and in parts of you know, that part of the world.
Yep.
And it's like $7 or $8 in, I think, in Europe, right?
It's even higher in Europe. I'm hearing, you know, around the areas, it's around $12 to $15.
Wow.
When you're looking at Europe and Asia. So,
and that's, that's the same natural gas, right?
Yeah, we're sitting on a ton of supply. Yes, we're sitting here on a ton of supply. And one of the conferences that I went to was the first ever natural gas vehicle infrastructure conference. I know it's a big name.
That was the whole. That was the name of the actual conference.
That was the name of the actual conference. It was the first conference. I'm sure they'll change it to change the name next year. It was in Houston. I sat there, and I was the only investor there. I was the only analyst there. Everybody was there with small businesses in this trend. Everybody's like, you know, you got companies like Walmart making the switch with all the trucking fleets are switching because the price savings are just enormous. I mean, the economics work right now, and they're working. And when the economics work, look out.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see the economics work in 1995 with cell phones, the big clunky things, they were expensive. Once the economics work, 1.6 billion cell phones were sold last year.
Right.
It just happens in every industry. It happens in the computer industry as well. I mean, soon the economics work, everybody owns a computer. Now people have two computers, one computer upstairs, a desktop and a laptop, whatever.
Right.
But once the economics works, that's what happens. And the economics are natural gas prices. The difference between natural gas prices and diesel, which is the fuel trucks use, is more than 50% right now.
You know, it used to be the diesel. You go to the gas station, you see that gasoline was whatever it was, $3 a gallon, and diesel was like $2.40.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's exactly opposite.
Yep.
And now we're also seeing that there's some concern about the whole ethanol component inside of gasoline, and, you know, there were some shortages, and now they're maybe, you know, looking at changing the rules around ethanol. And the question then is, okay, so natural gas, where does that come into play? Because a lot of people have been talking about these wonderful things like, you know, clean energy, which natural gas is cleaner energy, but not clean energy, right? But you know, we talk about the solars, we talk about the wind power, we talk about, you know, the battery-powered cars, we talk about electrical, we talk about all these different power savings or energy alternatives, I should say. And what's interesting, I guess, when you said before that, you know, here we have this amazing supply and it's really cheap. And in Europe, let's say, in Asia, it's not so. It's much different. As a matter of fact, in Japan right now, you and I talked about this, in Japan right now, what has happened is because of finally getting smart, they're kind of curtailing their nuclear ambitions. What's happened is that they're looking for alternatives. LNG is the place they're looking, for example. China is actually looking to develop an entire natural gas infrastructure development process and to do a lot more in the energy development in that area. And what happened is that they came out last week with an announcement, but they said it's going to take us 5 to 7 years to get this thing going. And in the meantime, they're going to have to import. So in a way, the benefit to us is that we have low natural gas pricing, but the benefit also is that we have low natural gas pricing that may go up in the future. We're kind of like Venezuela, right? Where we have this really, really cheap product that we have a lot of. And the question is, you know, hopefully we'll be able to, you know, treat the world nicely and they'll buy from us, right?
Yeah, and I think they're definitely going to buy with us as long as prices stay where they are. But you know, just to go a little bit more into LNG theory, what happened with Japan is, you know, the total overreaction, almost like you know, the BP oil spill. You know,
yep.
What do? They completely shut down nuclear altogether. They shut down like 90% of its capacity. Now, if you think about that, even for us as the U.S., I mean, where's our fuel? Our fuel for electricity comes from what? Coal, natural gas, nuclear. Mm-hmm. If you shut down any of those, you have to make it up someplace else. And the only place they can make it up is LNG.
Right.
So they only produce like 5% of, I mean, they produce relatively nothing in natural gas, LNG. So what they have to do is import a ton of this stuff, and they shut down all their nuclear capacity. So that's driving up day rates for shippers like Golar LNG. Guys, you can take a look at the chart. You'll see it straight up.
But we just saw that Golar, I think, came out with earnings. It looked horrible. Wasn't it Golar?
Yeah, well, Golar did come. It's horrible, but you got to, I mean, if you look at the year chart, I mean, the stock's off to the races.
I agree with you. Recently. I'm not talking about the stock. But, I'm talking about the earnings.
Yes.
Why are the earnings bad if we're seeing this happening?
Well, the earnings are bad. The earnings are bad compared to consensus.
Right.
So if you look at them, they're probably still up a ton. But if consensus estimates are much higher, then it doesn't matter. I mean, it depends if they beat consensus. I think consensus just got a little bit ahead of these analysts who just said, "Listen, you know, these guys are going to make a fortune," and you know, and the stock came down.
Frank, one of the things I think is really comical these days is how blatantly wrong analysts have been, both economists and stock analysts. They over and you know about a. 2 years ago, we had a professor on that talked about the analysis he did about the overconfidence and underconfidence of analysts and how you should just pretty much avoid everything they say. Because when things are good, they're overconfident. When things are bad, they're underconfident or pessimistic. And usually you're going to miss on both sides. So right now we see the economy getting a little bit better. And all of a sudden we're starting to see the economic surprise index roll over in the U.S. as example. We're seeing the same thing about stocks, like Westport Innovations. Yeah. What happened this week with that?
Oh, I thought Westport can't. I mean, they raised guidance for the future, and they did a huge offering at $43. I mean, fantastic management there. I mean, you're looking at Chinese Energy. They did a huge offering at $8. The stock's $15. Look how much more money they could have raised. Westport stock's up 200%. They did a 5.5 million share offering almost at the top of its stock price. So, you know, people don't realize Westport Energy, the stock just ramped up tremendously. And I think it was due for a pullback. And now it's about 10% off its highs, but it's still up about 200% over the past 12 months, which is huge.
Right.
But I'm going to go back to your point that you just said, which is important for investors to understand, because when people come out with these forecasts and you say, oh, they're just a waste, they're not a waste, because if you could prove them wrong or right, that's how investors make a lot of money. If you could prove that the consensus or all these analysts like Goldman Sachs or whatever have no idea what they're talking about, that's the market. That's where the stock trades on based on what these guys say. And if you disagree with the consensus of economists and how much the economy is going to grow, a lot of these guys are just, went underneath the covers and said the U.S. was going to go into a recession, right, in October. I didn't believe that. I bought cyclicals. I did great for my newsletter subscribers. So if you could, you know, don't listen to people when they say, well, don't pay attention. Pay attention to what they say. If you prove them wrong and take the other end of that bet, you'll make a lot of money.
Yeah, when the consensus is wrong and the thing moves the other direction, it always happens is the case, right? When the company beats or misses. By the way, speaking about newsletters, Frank's over at Stansberry Research, a great firm that has how many newsletters do you guys have now?
I think we have about 12 newsletters, and we just became, I think, one of the largest financial newsletter publisher in the world.
That's all because of you.
Yeah, no, it's not because
you want me to write a letter of recommendation to get your raise? What do you want me to do?
No, sure? I have a very good staff, seriously. I'm not being humble either.
You don't want a raise?
Of course I want a raise.
What Porter, if you're listening, Porter, hello. Porter, you listening? Frank needs a raise.
Hopefully I'll get that.
Maybe he'll pay for me to come up and see you.
Ah, there you go.
You
don't have to worry. I'll pay. You come to see me. Everything's on me.
All right, so here's what I want to talk about. So let's talk about this really cool, I guess it would be interaction. So we have natural gas, just the general pricing of natural gas. Now there's this question of, okay, so let's believe that natural gas is a good thing for the future, and we'll say, it's going to be in cars and trucks and buses and all this good stuff. Now, first, I want to talk about three things and tie it all together. So we know the pricing of the commodity. All right, put that aside for a second. We got Chart Industries, we got Westport Innovations, and we got Clean Energy Fuels. I want you to kind of build me a linkage between the three of those from beginning to end, how that all works together, and explain what each one does.
Well, Chart Industries is like a nuts and bolts company. It's almost like a supplier for Apple, like maybe Skyworks Networks that makes the parts for the Apple iPhones and iPads. They make the LNG fueling tanks, which is very important. Clean energy, and that business right now is booming. That's first in line. That's not like a lagging thing. That's first in line. You're going to see, clean energy fuel is they make the natural gas fueling stations, largest provider in America. And with those guys, they're seeing huge demand. There's only 1,000 natural gas fueling stations. To put that in perspective, there's over 100,000 gasoline stations.
Wow.
So even though the economics work in order for trucking companies right now to make the switch to natural gas engines and to run a natural gas, we have to get those fueling stations built. And that's what's happening right now. If we can get incentives for anything, don't provide them for the trucks. Provide them for these for people to make more natural gas fueling stations, because there's only 110,000 vehicles running on natural gas in the U.S., which is insane, because there's 234 million vehicles in the U.S. Now, the first couple of years, if you build a natural gas fueling station, you're not going to make money. I believe in 5 years from now, you're going to make a ton of money as this trend really takes off. You're going to see companies, I believe, if prices stay where they are, which I think they will. I mean, I saw the Chesapeake, the conference I went to, the Apache CEO, Steve Farris, came in and said, look, based on the numbers, we have a 100-year supply. He goes, as far as I'm concerned, we have over a 300-year supply.
That's right now. Well, I agree with him. And let him have a 1,000-year supply. But that's right now when, first of all, at the level of exploration and production. But that's also the fact that you mentioned there's only 1,000 gas stations and there's only a certain amount of cars. But if we see that it ramp up, that becomes geometrically divided, right?
Well, what you're saying is, the markets are going to adapt and we're going to find a way to increase demand. But even at a 100-year supply, if every single truck converted to natural gas, it would only take up 3 trillion cubic feet. We use 24 trillion cubic feet in the U.S. alone. So we're talking about very, very little demand with a 100-year supply. That's how much demand we have. So those of you who think natural gas is going to hit $5 again, I don't see that happening.
Why was it $5? We had the exploration then. I mean, there's more now, but we had it then. You know, what is it something different in the market? Is there just a dysfunction in the futures pitch? Let's be honest, a couple of things. Oil prices should not probably be at 106, 107. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a lot, maybe, I don't know, $15, $10, $20 built in because of geopolitical problems. Mm-hmm. But, do we have a natural gas situation that is priced almost at a reasonable level to what should be from supply and demand? Or, are we going to see it, because it did. It's dropped, 25, 30% it dropped originally this year?
It's down like 40%, yeah. But, you're looking at natural gas, and the thing is, what's changing is these companies continue to drill. And you say, why the hell would they continue to drill? I mean, natural gas price, Chesapeake and Talisman just said, listen, okay, we're not, we have to cut production. We don't have a choice. But, natural gas has been falling from 475 the whole year. Mm-hmm. It's been 4 for a while, and now it's, under 3. So the thing is, when you're putting all these costs up front, it pays to in order to get that money paid back, you have to drill. You're not going to put $10 million up. Just say, hypothetical figure, $10 million up, and natural gas prices come down, you say, forget it. What you're going to do is you're going to continue to drill as much as you can and try to get $2, $3 million back. It's still a loss, but it's better than saying, I'm not going to do anything. So once you put in any capital intensive business, once you put those high costs up front, you have no choice but to continue with the projects. People wonder why they kept building condos in Miami, even though the buildings next door were empty, because they put the costs up already. That's why they had to keep building and mm-hmm. increase supply enormously. So I think over the past 8 months, you really saw this trend where Apache, Chesapeake, and Kana said, okay, listen, we have a ton of this stuff. We have to find a way to create demand, and that's going to be putting fuel in trucks, putting fuel in cars, and all of these companies are actually combining together to produce more natural gas fueling stations. So that's where it comes out. And then you said the last company was Westport, which makes the actual engines, which is seeing enormous, enormous demand right now. And they're basically, the only business in town that does this. So, the quarter, the earnings, they're not supposed to be projected to make earnings a year from now. However, they did raise 2012 revenue guidance, I thought, significantly by 25% higher than consensus for next year. I think they're going to continue to see more demand. They just signed a deal with Cummins to increase demand. These guys are they're hiring more people. They just see continued demand because this trend is actually starting to develop.
So where's the downside of this? There's got to be some downside. Where does this whole thing flaw out and say, you know what, it was a great idea. But then again, so was solar, it seemed. But it was a great idea, and we want to see some great opportunities here. But in the end of the day, it became just a big fluffer, just piece of junk, and it's done.
Yeah, yeah. Well, first, you can't compare solar and wind to natural gas. I mean, you know, they're not a 24-hour baseload power. I mean, if the sun's not out, you can't use solar. If it's not breezy,
wait,
you can't
is that the problem at my house?
I mean, really?
Wait a minute.
It's just seriously, but solar. I mean, I don't know. I mean, and I know you know you could feel free to send me emails on sfkersey@stansburyresearch.com. Yeah, it just I think solar is. There might be a couple companies that benefit, but really. If you take out the government incentives, it's not going to work. Right now, natural gas as a transportation fuel doesn't need government incentives. The economics work. It's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying all solar doesn't work. The solar panel makers are making money, but most of the companies in there don't. I mean, they have losses, and if the government pulls out their funding, they go under.
Well, that's because, Frank, that's because what happened was it was a great idea. It was doing really well, and then became a flood of companies that did the same thing.
Was it a great idea?
Well, initially, maybe it was a good idea. Well, I like the idea from the perspective of solar powering peripheral devices. So, for example, although it's kind of clunky and ugly looking, I guess, you know, like lights that are not used that often side of streets for cities and things of that nature, signage, things of that, you know, but I obviously, you know, we're not going to have a solar car.
Yeah, listen, if for me, in my opinion, if the government has to pay you to do something, then it's usually not a good idea. That's just my opinion. Right now, the government doesn't have to provide incentives to trucking companies in right. order for them to make the switch because the economics works.
Well, so, just look at Solyndra, what happened there, right? Look what happened with the company up in Massachusetts, the solar company. I mean, that was a quick, you know, $1 billion out, done.
Yeah, so, no, I agree. Well, you said risk to this business is if natural gas prices go higher, which they could go higher. We could find more demand. I don't know. We could start exporting it within 3 years instead of five. We can see drastic cuts in production that pushes up natural gas prices, and we can see gasoline prices collapse, even though there's forecasts out there that are predicting $5 a gallon by Memorial Day, which is insane. Now, if that happens, you're going to see probably a 65% difference in prices between natural gas and gasoline. But another risk is it's almost like, you know, the chicken and the egg. You have to have these natural gas fueling stations. We had this stage, I want to say about 20 years ago, and they weren't able to build fueling stations. If you can't build fueling stations, it's not going to work. It's only going to work maybe for trucks who absolutely, you know, medium-duty trucks, which are like school buses and, you know, waste management trucking, you know, truck companies that have the same routes. It's pretty easy. But in order for this to make it into cars, you have to build these fueling stations.
And I just had an epiphany. There is this, do you see the sky opening and clouds parting and angel sound? Do you see it too?
I see it too.
You do, right? Check this out. So you know how many years ago you'd go and you'd schlep your tank for the propane and you'd go over there and you'd get your tank filled and you had a swab and then you'd go back home with the same tank, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you started doing this Blue Rhino thing where you go to the 7-Eleven, all over the place. They got these things and you just take the, you give them a tank and you take a tank. Mm-hmm. How about we just have a snap-in tank?
Well, they're actually providing, they're starting to provide like two different fueling thing. So, you know, you put your gas in your car, right next to it would be a place for natural gas. This way you can use either or. And they have converters that actually are doing this right now. But I also want to make clear to the audience out there, I don't want to sound like I'm overly excited about this trend, but you're looking at GM, Ford, and some of you might say, well, they'll never make, you know, cars in America that run natural gas. But they already make cars like that for every place else where natural gas prices are right. much higher.
Right.
I mean, but they're just
crazy,
saying,
huh?
Build the fueling stations and we're in. So,
well, that's T. Boone Pickens. That's T. Boone Pickens, right? That's his company.
Well, he got his wish because right now clean energy fuels is, what, 17? And, you know, he was talking about that when that stock was at $5, $6, $7.
Yeah.
Now it's at its high. But, you know, it's just when you have guys like Chesapeake and Kana coming on, making deals with you know, putting $150 million to $1 billion behind clean energy fuels to build these stations, it makes you think that maybe this trend is for real.
The other thing I'll mention is obviously Chesapeake had to sell off a lot of their properties to meet their recent bond demands because they got in a little over their head with leverage. And there was a little bit of a problem there, right?
Yeah, Chesapeake scares me. The producers scare me. You know, right now it's just so cheap, and you have to realize that everybody's talking about this. So I think a lot of it's factored in. I mean, they were talking about the Utica shale and how big that's going to be,
and
you know, at 31,
all that.
It's 22, 23 now. So, but yeah, they're highly leveraged. They have a lot of properties to sell, but Chesapeake, I don't like. My boss actually likes Chesapeake. I'm not crazy about Chesapeake. I think they're too leveraged. And if natural gas prices do push lower, stay below three, I think that company's going to get nailed.
Your boss, you mean Porter?
Or yeah, Porter,
something wrong? Wait. Hold on. Really?
He does have a lot of long recommendations.
Really?
In his newsletter. Yeah, he does.
So now I have a question. So when we look at the new law or the new, I don't even call it legislation, but the new discussion that's being out that fracking is going to be constrained because of some of the concern about chemicals in the water, and they're going to allow local townships and cities to actually have a say in, you know, the fracking condition. Is that going to put a little bit of a crimp on some of this drilling?
That could. Yeah, the environmentalists going out there. Look, there hasn't been – I mean, people saw the movie Gasland and you know, they freaked out a little bit. But they have to remember those pipes were built like 20 years ago before fracking even existed. I mean, those pipes were just old pipes. They really didn't have to do with fracking with the water on fire and stuff. But as far as the fracking industry is concerned, they passed laws where they have to disclose the chemicals. They don't use any harmful chemicals. People are saying, well, what about the earthquakes? Is it causing earthquakes and everything? Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. I don't know if there's any proof. Right now – there's no hard facts saying that fracking causes pollution in water. I mean, there's nothing really hard, and they've been through this in the industry. And I don't see it stopping the industry anytime soon. I don't think they're going to say, okay, stop drilling the Bakken, stop with the frack. I just don't see it. Right. I could be wrong. I know there's environmentalists, and they're really far out there sometimes, and they're probably going to send me emails and say, Frank, you know, you're trying to kill the world.
Right.
Listen, I just
look
at the facts.
Man.
Yeah, I just look at the facts right now. They're not stopping fracking. There's not just enough evidence to support it.
Yeah. Now, last time you were on, you talked about a company called Heckman.
Yes.
How's that doing since?
Heckman has come down. Heckman has been, I want to say, one of my only losers in the portfolio. It's actually above our buy-up to price. It's actually above the price I recommended it, but it went from like 5 and change to 7 and pulled back to 5 and change again. So.
And I want to talk about another situation here because there's something that has been problematic, and I think it's endemic of this current market, or not even the current, the last years and all. I mean, remember we talked about a company called Puticol, like, 2 years ago?
Yep.
And, it got just obliterated, it came back and all that, but now they're being sued. It's a big Ponzi scheme and all that, right? Or that at least that the director, the CEO, stole all the money and all crap that went on there, right?
Yeah.
How is it that – now, my question is more so about – not the company itself, but how is it that, in your opinion, totally switching gears, that we can protect ourselves as investors from this kind of sham?
I think you can protect yourself by not investing in China companies anymore. That's probably one way.
That's
I mean, we talked about this the last couple of podcasts, and I've been to China. I sat down with these companies. I saw these plants. The assets were for real, except the CEOs have ties with the government, and they're doing, they're taking money out of the company, doing deals, not reporting to the SEC. So no matter how smart you are, who you think you know, these companies just can't be trusted. I mean, and I learned the hard way and had a couple of losers. With Puticol, we stopped out at a 0% loss. I mean, we recommended it. And then the company came down, which is why I want to reiterate that it's important to use stop losses. But, you never know what company's over there. And talking from a guy that actually went, sat down at the table with these guys, it was great. So the 1,000 employees working, their trucks coming in, the business was perfectly fine. I thought I did my due diligence. However, if the CEO is doing things outside of what you can't see, and that's what's happened to a lot of companies, and that's unfortunate because there's actually a lot of really good companies in China that have also fell down tremendously because of this. And it's kind of sad because there's like 4 or 5 companies that I would love to buy that I think are fantastic that are down 50-60% simply because no one ever wants to buy a China company again because they can't be trusted.
Well, and then not only that, you get the volatility. Look what Sina recently and the government coming in and saying, hey, you know what? The microblogging is going to be a problem. Sina dropping off a cliff, then it going back up. You know, you look at just the whole environment there. There's some good stuff. Remember we talked about Align Technologies, the orthodontist company. I said, hey, you know what? There's an opportunity for that.
Yeah,
they've actually done pretty well. I never bought them. They were too thin.
Well, all you need is one short-selling blog to say anything, which they won't disclose their name or anything. Right. And that stock's down 30-40%.
It's interesting. There's a blog that was called The Street Sweeper. Now, I want to give you a little story here because this is a true story I'm about to tell you here, okay? The Street Sweeper blog came out with a discussion about a company that we recommended for our clients that we own called Questcor. Questcor is a company that's a pharmaceutical company, and what they do is they have the main thing they do is really for multiple sclerosis. Now, what was interesting is they came out time after time after time, and they came up with a discussion about how they are selling more, and overall that their product sales are up sequentially, the pricing is solid, all this. Now, what happened was that the Street Sweeper blog came in and said, you know what, there is a big problem with this because this company is blah, 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 marketing this and that. Stock just fell off a cliff, okay? Now, we said, you know what, this is some real good support here at 3470. And I on Trigger Trading, which is our new Trigger Research Alerts product that you and I have talked about, we talked about this, said, you know what, Questcor looks really good, and kind of be careful about this. They're getting away from this, et cetera. Well, they come out with earnings this week. They go from about 34 and change to 37 and change, up about 8 or 9% on the day when the earnings came out because the earnings were blown out. They were beautiful. So, you know, you may see the street sweeper come in again and start to think, oh, their earnings were good because their marketing is really aggressive and all this. But, I mean, come on. You know, this was, on one hand, I'd like to give it to those, you know, the players that are just coming out with BS. On the other side, I mean, we actually, you know, go in and short stocks as well. But I got to tell you something, that when they do lying and manipulation of the stock, that really kind of pisses me off.
I tell you, you know, Puta Cole came out with great numbers too. Fantastic numbers. Right. So just to let you know, but you know, with that situation, you just have to be very careful. There's so many situations in America that you know, and you see those regulations are much, much better than the rest of the world. And even in Canada, I think there's fantastic regulation there as well, and mining companies, if you want to go there. But with China, it's just it's real difficult to believe what they're saying there. Even, I mean, look, you know, if anyone wants to invest in China stock, think of this. You know, think of Sinopharm.
Oh,
Paulson got absolutely crushed. The guy probably has a research team of brilliant MBAs.
And now he's being sued.
Maybe 50 to 100 people, and the guy got it wrong. So just to tell you, if you're an individual investor and think you can go, here's a guy that probably sent his whole entire research team there, which. When I was there, I saw other research teams there from like Goldman Sachs and Rodman and Renshaw, small firms, large firms in China, researching these stocks. Here's a guy that sent his team over that went to visit the sites, went to visit the assets, and it turned out to be a fraud. So, you know, just think about that for the individual investor if you're thinking about investing in a China company, because I think I'm pretty good at my job. I've been doing it for 15 years. I have a pretty good track record, and I got China wrong. So, you know, if you know, a lot of guys who do this for a living are getting it wrong, and it's very difficult to read. I just be very careful, individual investor. I hate to see anyone lose money on it.
All right, let's close up here today and talk about the market conditions that we've seen over the last several weeks. I talk about how it seems like everybody woke up on January 1st, the bell struck midnight, and whew, I'm buying stocks. And there was a big turn from what happened last year, and all of a sudden now we're seeing a big run. Now, this is almost identical to this point in mid-February to what we saw last year. We saw a lot of enthusiasm at the beginning of the year. We saw economics pick up and all, and then things fell off a cliff. Now, with the recent revelation that Greece is, I don't know if they're bailed out or not. I don't even know what to say about this anymore. You know, they're not bailed out, and they're not, you know, going to meet the demands, and it's all bogus. But nonetheless, let's pretend, shall we, that Greece is in good shape, and you know, that the economics are not maybe not improving, but not getting worse. Although the last number of economic numbers we saw in the U.S. were getting a little bit softer. I think you agree with that, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Nothing major, just a little bit. But what is the story with these U.S. markets? Is it just that the world is saying, you know what, the best place to be right now is the United States? Or, you know, what's happening? What is this constant bid? I mean, Japan. I think Japan has had a record number of up days for the Japanese small caps more than in the last 50 years. Like 28 days in a row they've been up.
Yeah, but in the last 12 years, the market has been dead.
So, all right. But still, their market's still dead. They were much worse off. I mean, I know that the Japanese government came with a ton of money recently to try to, you know, stimulate. But, I mean, so what's your take on this? What's your take on this market condition?
Well, a few things. First of all, you know, if you're looking since 2009, there's been something like $500 billion removed out of equities. I mean, people hate equities, and they should hate equities after what happened in 2009. I mean, you were told, you know, if you buy large cap stocks, you buy these companies, you're home forever, you'll be okay, you retire, and, you know, you have a house, and, you know, your home value got cut in half, your portfolio was down 60%, and people just said, all right, I can't do this because I'm 65, I got to live on something, I can't work anymore. But there's so much money removed from the stock market. Could you find me a better place to put your money right now? I mean, seriously. I'm not putting it in bonds. I'm not putting it into housing. Housing's great. I think housing's great. Great time to buy a house. Interest rates are lower than ever. But, you know, that's not a liquid investment. You have to tie it up. But really, I mean, you're not going to put it in bonds. You're not going to be putting in treasuries earning zero when accounting for inflation, negative interest rates when accounting for inflation. You know, and stocks just offer a very good opportunity. I think people are realizing that, saying, okay, not every stock, like right now especially, I think in you know, maybe December when the market really got crushed in December, you know, you could have bought anything and you think you're a hero right now. But right now, there's particular industries. I think right now it's more of a stock picker's market where you have to be very selective in what you're picking. But there's a lot of good companies out there. I think the market, you know, we're topping out here. We've moved up so far so fast. But I think, like you said, it's going to be interesting to see if this follows the same pattern as almost the last 2 years when it's almost like sell in May and go away.
Right.
Let's see what happens. But I do like what's happening with the market. I mean, we're hitting resistance here. We're not seeing 200-300 point sell-offs. We're not seeing crazy volatility. We're just seeing like, okay, let's slow down a little bit and you know, let's sift to earnings season. I kind of like what's happening here to get to the next phase. Maybe we go higher, but we have to realize, whether you like it or not, the government is making it.
No
so
kidding.
You have to put your money into stocks. I mean, they have 0% interest rates forever. You sent me the link. Goldman Sachs says it's going to be to 2015. The government says 2014. 0% interest rates. And we blame Greenspan for pushing interest rates, when was it, 2002 to 1%, creating the biggest housing bubble in history. We're at 0% for three times as longer, and that's just starting to filter into the economy. But and you're also looking at Greece. Here's the perfect situation. Basically, and I'm going to say this on there, and I gave my email address out. You can feel free to kill me on this one. There's no more European risk. There's none. I mean, what they did is, how much did they give? Was it $137
billion? No, you know, €137 billion.
You know what the goal is? The goal is to lower their GDP, their debt-to-GDP ratio, to 120% by 2020.
Right.
That's the goal. If you're going to bail out Greece, you're basically saying, we are going to throw money at everything forever in the world as long as we can, if you're bailing out Greece. Because Greece is kind of like... It's so, and I said, sorry, okay, it's almost like going on a diet and your goal is to just gain 7 pounds. I mean, it's just – that's how bad – I just can't believe that they actually are throwing money at Greece, which seems like they want a default. They don't want to take their austerity
measures. Yeah, Greece is like fighting the whole thing. Right. No, they're fighting it.
They're like – and, you know, if your goal is to reduce your debt to GDP to 120% 8 years from now, are you actually kidding me? So if you're going to bail out Greece, which is the worst possible place in the world, I think – then you're gonna bail out everybody else. So I think what that bailout did is basically take European risk off the table. Like I said, I think May is going to be the key here. Let's see how the markets react. I'm going to be cautious on May. I'm probably going to take some profits off of my stocks in a newsletter. And personally, because I am nervous and I saw a 50% decline in the average small cap in 2011 from like May through October. It's terrible. So I just want to see how the markets play out. But that's going to be the key point. Up to now, I think the markets will be okay over the next couple months.
You know, it's interesting. You say, you know, they're going to bail out Greece, or they did bail out Greece at least at this point, and there's European risks off the table. But at the same time, you said that they're going to keep on putting money into everything they can for as long as they can. Isn't that the real big question? As long as they can. When is that? Like, what is that? Is there a date? Is there a, is that, you know, kind of like till hell freezes over? What is that?
All I know is it's not soon. No, and I mean that dead seriously. As funny as that sounds, I know that in 3 years, we're fine. With the amount of money and the fact that the U.S. can print as much money as it can, the fact that they were able to spend as much money and bail out the car industry and the auto industry, and it actually worked to some extent, they're taking credit, means that if anything else, if any particular industry runs into trouble, we're here, we're going to spend as much money as it takes. It's very scary. It's terrible. I feel bad for my kids. I think they're going to be in a horrible situation, even their kids. But right now, I think what the government's creating, keeping interest rates at zero, I just can't find a better place to put your money than stocks, unless you want to put it in cash and, you know, lose money when you account for inflation.
I think also what you're also saying here, and maybe I'll couch it a little bit differently, is that price discovery has been a little bit obscured because of the fact that governments constantly have the handout. And, you know, you have to question some of the longer-term effects of this. And, you know, don't forget, at the end of 2012, a lot of the various tax benefits that were postponed, because everything's postponing, which will, by the way, be postponed again, I'm sure, you know, are going to expire. And there's a heap of taxes on the for potentially to roll out again that will be increased. As a matter of fact, President Obama came out with a tax discussion about how he's going to reduce down corporate taxes, but yet at the same time get rid of a lot of the loopholes. And then you got the other side, Santorum and all those guys that are going to kind of try to increase stuff over here but decrease it over there. And you know, everybody's fighting for their side. Don't forget, you know, the Republicans want to make sure that it's quote unquote fair, but a little bit towards their user base, if you will. And the Democrats want to make it fair, but to their user base. So the question is going to become, you know, during the election, which seems like now, once again, amazingly, Santorum's got a major lift there. But if, clearly, if we continue down the road of having better employment numbers and stock market numbers and all that, I mean, Obama's got the ticket.
Yeah, I think that's the question. If you're an investor, speaking from an investor point of view and taking, you know, Democrat, Republican, I don't care what you are. I mean, if you're an investor, you want to find out your goal is to find out which party is going to win. And right now, if they had it today, Obama's definitely going to win.
Yep.
I mean, if the economy stays where it is, Obama's definitely going to win. But I would kind of ignore everything that they're saying because nothing's going to get done in an election year. It's all talk.
Yep.
You know, I just be very careful as an investor. If you say, oh, they're going to cut taxes, maybe I can find ideas in this certain sector. don't go there in 2012. It's going to be a little crazy. Yeah. I think that you should just be focusing on who's going to win here. And it looks like today Obama is just – I think Obama's a guarantee based on the economy. If it continues that way, he's probably going to be in.
I hear you. All right, let's sum this all up. So bottom line is that you like natural gas, maybe not so much the commodity per se, although it probably has a chance to move up from here. But generally speaking, it's going to be really reliant on the fact that you're going to see additional – building of engines and all that, and that's really going to be due with Westport.
Yeah, and real quick, and I never really plug myself. I'm going to plug myself here and throw it out there. There's a video we have, investorradio3.com, where it's absolutely for free. It's a long video where I have all these stats, and at the end, you're going to see something where you can subscribe to my newsletter if you want. If you don't worry about it, but the video's for free. And I sum up like so many different facts of everything that I found out from all the industries, from the professionals that I talked to, and put it into this video if you want to go take a look.
What does that mean, Investor Radio 3? What does that mean?
It's a link, www.investorradio3.com.
The word or the numbers? Three.
The number three.
Okay.
Investor Radio 2R. So if you go there, it's like a 30-minute video. It's a little long, but you're going to see all the facts you need. You also, again, you don't have to subscribe to my newsletter, but a lot of good facts that you'll see. And
okay, hold on. Stop. Investor Radio 3 or Investor Radio 2R, what are we dealing with?
It's investorradio3.com, but Investor Radio has two R's in it.
Radio.
Yeah, okay. Oh, you're making me plug it even more. I love this. Investorradio3.com. All right,
X again. I'll put a link on our site. All right, I'm going to put you on the spot for a second here. Well, we talked about that. We talked about the fracking. We talked about the people that make they talked about yours and my new business of making clip-on natural gas tanks that you can get from 7-Eleven.
Yes.
We talked about the various shippers of LNG that's going to be shipping things out, like TK Golar LNG. We talked about Chesapeake, and I like CLR, WTI, by the way, which have peripheral in that area as well. Mm-hmm. Chart Industries that makes a lot of the components and all that.
Cybergenics, yeah.
Okay, and now I'm going to put you on the spot. What do you think of the new reports we did on earnings and all that? Have you taken a look at those?
I love them. I actually love them.
They're cool, right?
I think they're fantastic. I read them all the time. They're going on all the blogs I look at, too. A place like FinViz, you get posted on that, and I always see it, and I always click it and see it. And I know you just did one on Westport.
Yep.
I definitely like it. It's a quick, like 1 minute take of a company where, if a lot of people out there, they don't have the time that we do to invest in some of this stuff. It's nice to just click on a link, see that report, and be able to have all the information. Yeah.
Trigger points, cool stuff. We're having fun with it. Anyway, Frank Curzio, Stansberry Research, also at investor2rradio3.com. Whatever the hell it is.
Investorradio3.com.
And we'll do is we'll make sure to put a post. So you can see, you don't have to mess it up yourself. We'll mess it up for you. We'll put a link on the Discipline Investor the website when it goes to this particular show notes. Frank Curzio, always a pleasure. I'll see you soon. I'm coming up to visit you and your family and take over your house.
And go golfing.
Oh, definitely. That'd be great.
All right. Sounds great, bud.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right. Frank Curzio. Great to have him as always. He's just an amazing flood of information. It's kind of like trying to take a sip out of an open fire hydrant with him, isn't it? But it's great because Frank does – what's great about Frank and what I really like about him is, I mean, he's humble and all that, but yet at the same time, he knows his stuff and he really digs down for the research. He's not always right, as a matter of fact. I'm sure he'll admit that. Plenty of times he's wrong. We've been crying our soup plenty of times when small caps are getting out of favor, and he's been investing some with wide stops. And, when I've seen things going crazy against us, we kind of commiserate together. But you know what? At the same time, he has the ability to understand the bigger picture. And that's what I really like about Frank. Anyway, I'm going to wrap it up here. If you have any questions, simply write me, askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Throughout the week, I'm going to put some of the charts up, maybe on Monday, Tuesday, of the stocks that we talked about today as well. So just check back over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And if you want to learn more about how we manage money here, of course, you could do so. We have a 12-minute video. If you are kind of frustrated with your thought that, well, I'm not in the market, but I should be. Or when I get in the market, I know it's going to go down. What's the deal on this? And if you want to find really a happy medium to that, well, that's what we do. We manage money on a couple different strategies, and you could check it out. We have a minimum of $50,000. I encourage you to really check it out because we have this transparency that people really enjoy, whereas you could see what's happening in your accounts. And you have your own account, by the way. It's segregated. And at the same time, we have a private client update. We'll call it a weekly, daily update that you can see what's happening with the reasoning and theory and thesis about why we're doing what we're doing right or wrong. And, you know, that's something that you don't find in very many places. But you could check that out as well. And we are accepting new clients. So if you're thinking about that, if you like the stuff that we're talking about here, make sure to check that out. And for those of you that just are absolute about doing it yourself, you got to go over to Trigger Point Research. That's kind of why we built that. Some people just want to do it by themselves and they want to handle it, but they need good, actionable ideas. That's the problem sometimes, where you can't get actionable ideas from anywhere else because you got to do all the research. Well, we're giving you actionable ideas and the reasons for it, and finding some of those sweet spots to buy stocks and to sell stocks, go long, go short, etc. So check out TriggerPointResearch.com. Make sure to get on the mailing list, because if you're on there, the first people are going to get that two-week trial, and that's for free. And other than that, we'll see you soon. Next week's going to be another exciting week. Hope you learned a lot. Stay tuned for lots more to come. It's going to be a great year. See you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.